most excited about is the last day. We're doing something different. We're doing a day that is like not focused on content, but it's just focused on the Bitcoin culture. So that is going to be a lot of fun. And that is going to be like this festival day. So a lot of people want to go to Miami just to party. You can go to the festival day. You can party that entire week and experience the funnest parts of the conference. And I'm really excited for that, to just experience the Bitcoin culture, share the Bitcoin culture with a lot of newbies and tourists who are going to be coming through. It's going to be a lot of fun. Kit, did I hit on everything? I guess, where can people find the tickets?
Yeah, well, you can go to bit.tc/conference/registration to get the tickets. We've got 4 different passes. You touched on the festival one a little bit. We've got general admission, industry day passes, and then whale passes. And it's at the Miami Convention Center this year, which can hold up to 100,000 people. We're trying to aim for around 35,000 people this year. So 3 times what we had last year.
Thank you, Kit. Yeah. So, I mean, our ticket prices are going up too, right?
Yeah. They're going to go up at the end of the month. We pushed it back a little bit. So I think it's going to be like the 27th or 28th.
Okay.
So watch out. We'll be putting out notifications every day starting that Friday the 24th to remind people as well too.
Awesome. So yeah, get your ticket. Use your favorite promo code. A lot of people have promo codes out there, so keep an eye out. And Kit, I don't know if you have a promo code that we can share with all the listeners out there. But yeah, get your ticket. Don't miss out. It's going to be a great time.
Yeah. Anyone on the call that wants to use a promo code, they can use SATS15. So go ahead and order your ticket with that for today.
Awesome. Save yourself 15%, yeah?
Yes.
All right. Justin, welcome to the space, man. This space is to talk about your book. It's to have a conversation about Bitcoin and how it fits into helping people, some of the most disadvantaged people, have a second chance, have a third chance, get back up on their feet, have a first chance. I'm excited to talk about the book, talk about your story, talk about Bitcoin in general, but want to hand it back over to you. Why don't you kind of start by introducing yourself?
All right, man. No problem. Appreciate you, CK. First off, let me shout out Kit, because Kit has been like my lifeline to the space. My Instagram account got shut down. We're trying to get it back. I don't know. But yeah, Kit was just, she was a great correspondent for Bitcoin Magazine. So let me shout out Kit first.
You're welcome.
No problem. Yeah. She's the only person that was on IG just trying to, you know, help me get them back. So I appreciate that. But yeah, what's going on, everyone? I appreciate everybody being here. I'm Justin Redrick. Go by the Bitcoin Vegan. And again, I'm very grateful for Bitcoin Magazine for putting this space together. I'm a loss for words right now. So again, it's a great appreciation for being here. And yeah, man, let's go ahead. I'm ready to get into it, man. I don't know what else you want me to share, but I'm ready to get into it, man. I'm very grateful to have this stage.
Cool. Well, I'm going to find and pin a podcast that we did together where we jump into your story. But I guess, why don't you kind of give people like the 10-minute summary or the 5-minute summary of why you're writing a book about jail and what's your connection to that and Bitcoin?
Okay. Well, here we go. So I guess we can call this the introduction to Bitcoin or the Bitcoin story. So in a nutshell, man, the story of how I just even got into Bitcoin, what made Bitcoin so easy for me to say yes to, it came from a lot of years of just turmoil around the year, starting around like 2006. Me and my mother, we lost our home due to foreclosure, and that led us to live in a lot of different places. I wasn't able to play basketball like I expected, and I witnessed a good friend of mine get murdered at a party. And I just started noticing my life was like going kind of wild. I still graduated high school. I had gone to college, North Carolina A&T, but I was very low on finances and I didn't feel like I had a home for real. So I had gone to school for 2 years and then I ended up dropping out of college like a semester or two after making the dean's list, ironically because he said there weren't going to be no jobs 5 years after graduation. And that's when the light clicked off and I said, yo, so what the hell are we going to do about Sallie Mae? And no one else thought about this. So I really feel like something was going on that I needed not to be a part of. Dumbass decision at 19. And so after that, I dropped out of school, I had gone back home to Charlotte, North Carolina. And I just thought I was going to happily roll into some ways to make money. And what ended up happening is I ended up running with the wrong crowd of people that led me to go to prison for 3 years from the age of 21 to 24. So it was in prison where I learned I knew how to learn. I knew I wasn't just the dumbest person on the block. I just didn't have nothing to focus on. And it was in prison where I would tell guys, I'm like, man, I'm not going to do nothing that everyone else does when they go home, whether that's drive trucks or be a barber. There's no disrespect, but I wanted something greater. I wanted to make a bigger impact. So I would tell people, like, no matter what I do, I'm going to be majorly successful. And I would look at everybody else's stories, like, you know, folks, I might not like Floyd Mayweather, but he really used his hands to get to where he is, out of a one-bedroom apartment with, like, seven brothers and sisters, cousins and all that. So I knew all you had to do was be ready to put in the work to get there. And so when I came home, I was doing a lot of odd jobs, working in crazy places, retail merchandising, making like $400 every 2 weeks, sometimes even less than that. And I was like, yo, something has to fucking give. So I knew I was about to lose my job. So I started cooking vegan food out the house. I had this thing called Vegan on the Go. I would cook vegan food out the house, deliver it anywhere in Charlotte, because I knew I had to be an entrepreneur. The jobs that were given out were trash. You know, I couldn't be working like at McDonald's at the age of 25, 24. I mean, I could have, but it's not really feasible. It wasn't really feasible in my eyes to do it. I've learned the value of time. So I said, where's the best place I can put my time? And this is something I could create. So then, lo and behold, a few years go by, and I'm doing the vegan thing, and I run into my homeboy, man. Y'all know him as Bitcoin Zay. We were in Charlotte, and I've been knowing Zay since I was 11 years old. And he just said, hey, Justin, who the hell is this? He said, it's me, Isaiah. I said, all right, what's up, man? You know, we're talking and reintroducing ourselves, what we're doing now. And he said, yeah, follow me on Instagram at Bitcoin Zay. I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm like, all right, cool. So I do that. I still don't know what it is, but I remember one day I'm holding my little girl and I'm trying to figure out, like, you know, how the hell are people getting billions of dollars? Because I was in a position, I knew that my life had to severely change. The financial struggles were still there from back in the day. And it opened my eyes to see that I need to be a part of something great. And I would say to myself, I said, as long as I can be a part of something that I can get there early enough that it could change my life, I'm gonna run with it. It didn't matter what it was, I was gonna run with it because I just wanted an opportunity. So I remember one day I'm on Instagram and I see Zay's page and he has this graph up and it's a Bitcoin. And I just look at the graph, I'm like, I know graphs pretty well. Why the hell does this thing keep going up like this? And I saw a sharp dip and I saw the dip. I was like, cool, so it's some type of real thing here because nothing can just go up. Nothing can just go up. So I said, all right. So I hit him up. I said, bro, what the hell is Bitcoin? And, you know, he had gone into detail about it. He said, you know, this is something you can change your life with. It goes up. It's a storage of value like gold. You can spend it like money. And no one controls it. It's decentralized. And I said, what you mean by decentralized? He said, well, you know, the governments or banks can't get their hands on it. And I immediately, you know, that immediately registered with me because in prison, you have to use, if you don't have money to get from your family, then you have to use stamps. And the stamps on the yard was the currency we used. So in the regular world, stamps were 44 cents. But on the yard, we had it at 30 to 35 cents. So we were able to keep our own economy that way. And plus, you'll have your own quote unquote currency without, you know, having to worry about, I don't have any money coming from the house. So when he was explaining decentralization to me, I already had figured in my mind that this could work because I had already lived in that type of environment, where people just set the price, they agreed on the price, and it just kept going from there. So I said, all right, cool, I can do this. So I mean, I went home and I didn't have a job. I'm living in my mom's basement. And what the hell do I do? I said, yeah, I'm just gonna study this like I was in prison. I'm gonna study Bitcoin day by day like I was in prison. I would ask my friends about it who were doing pretty well. I guess they graduated from college and whatnot, had nice paying jobs. I asked them about Bitcoin. They were like, oh, nah, bro, you know, it's nothing good. It's not ready yet. It's this, that, and third. And this is when I started noticing separation of people and, like, just difference of people. But then on YouTube at that time, you had Richard Branson talking about it. You had Trace Mayer talking about it. You had even, sad to say, Mark Cuban was picking up Bitcoin back then. So I was like, yo, why are the people with this type of money saying Bitcoin is good, but the people with your type of money isn't? So I was like, well, let me go with the people who are talking good about this thing. So I remember I got scammed. I was introduced to this lending platform, and they said, you know, the jargon, we can give you compound interest on your returns after 60 days, blah, blah, blah. So I fell for it, gave them $150. And I was just like, damn, okay. I told Zay about it after the fact. And Zay said, well, ask him, can you get your money back? I said, you think it's a scam? He said, it is a scam, but ask him, can you get your money back? I said, all right. He said, no. He said, I told you. And that was the day I decided to never doubt Zay again when it came to Bitcoin. But I didn't really care that I got scammed, because in my eyes, the same thing was happening with money. You know, it was just another thing. So the getting scammed part didn't scare me. It actually kicked up in me the reason I wanted to actually learn Bitcoin, because I wasn't here to scam, but I was here to use this thing. There weren't a lot of people around me talking about it. And then I started looking at numbers. It was only like 1% of people in the world who were even exposed to Bitcoin at that time. So I saw opportunity. And when I sat down and thought about it, and I was asking, I was like, why does this feel like I'm early? He said, because you are. You are. It's 7 years old. And I was like, damn, this was that manifestation, this wish, this prayer, whatever, where I said to myself, if I'm there early, I'm going to go in. And that's what happened. I did anything I could to get some money to buy Bitcoin. It was one point in time I worked at a car wash in my neighborhood. I was going to try to get tips because I used to work at car wash when I was like 19, 18. And that was one of my only jobs. And so I was just like, all right, let's see if I can get some tips. I can probably buy some Bitcoin. I was out there at that car wash for 8 hours almost and only walked away with $12. I was like, never again. So I was still cooking food. I did anything to get Bitcoin. I had a friend who had a lawn company. I said, man, hey, you mind if I do some work? He said, yeah, bro, I got you. You know, he would pay me what he could. It would be $10 an hour. We might do 5 hours of work. I might take $10, $20 to try to buy Bitcoin with, because in my mind, I had already experienced rock bottom, you know, and $1 in the bank by the numbers had proved it was going to be better in Bitcoin than it would be in the bank. And growing up, you hear a lot of times about, you know, how your grandparents did a lot to put your parents through college. And, you know, in the Black community, that meant like doing backbreaking work, or your grandmother scrubbing floors, saving up pennies to put folks through college. So I had that mentality. I'm like, well, shit, if that worked with that, I can definitely do that with Bitcoin. And we could just see what happens. That there was really no fear around it because I had already experienced the lowest points of life. And that's when I started also like, all right, I wanted to try to teach people. I did everything. I remember one time I would tell people, hell, I set up a wallet for you for $20. They would pay me. I used to tell people, hey, I'll go get the Bitcoin for you. I would put a fee on it. I'll go get it before they stop making that illegal. It didn't really matter. But the greatest part I learned was just being able to study and learn Bitcoin as I wanted to. Because like Zay and I would talk about, years from now, people will need this information and you'll be the one to have it out of a crazy situation. So it was a lot of dedication there. I learned a lot along the way. I lost a lot. Shit, I lost some on the boat in Miami. And so within that point, it was the only thing going on. I didn't want to spend 5 years in some industry, whether it was real estate, whether it was finance. I'm like, yo, if I'm going to do 5 years there and still be in the middle with every other mediocre person, why the hell would I waste my time doing that? I was 24, 25 coming out of prison. I needed something that was going, if I'm going to dedicate 5 years to, it needs to be something that's great. And Bitcoin was the answer. And that year, that first year, 2016, when Bitcoin was around $600, I was buying that shit every time I got paid. Sometimes I bought too much. I didn't know what I was doing. I was learning about finances. I was learning about investment. I had to learn all of this on the fly in Bitcoin just by noticing and comparing Bitcoin to everything else. Nothing could stand against it. I looked at Bitcoin like Floyd Mayweather. Nothing was beating Bitcoin. Not the fork wars, not net neutrality. Now, none of that crazy, goofy stuff that was going on in 2017, nothing defeated it. And I knew I made a great decision. So it was just on me to lean more into that decision. And then Bitcoin Vegan, the name came about because I was like, hell, I did a search on social media. No one had it. So I was like, well, let's go ahead and rock with this then and see what we create. And those were like the earliest years. Like when Big Head going to $20,000, that was the most money I ever had in my life. When Bitcoin crashed, I was like, what the hell? But I was like, all right, so now it's time to get to work. What are you going to do? You know, you got to create something. You got to create something that's going to bring you some money to at least be able to buy Bitcoin at the price when it starts going up later on, because it was good, you know, to play. And you can still, and I would tell people, you can still do it now if you don't have no other option. But it was good to play with, you know, $10, $20 here, get you a few million Satoshis. But those days, I knew those days were going to be gone. So I had to think about, how am I going to put in work to build something that I can afford to buy Bitcoin day after day after day. And so I took that time between those last 3 years to really learn how to do something, build a business, learn how to get money, learn how to work on my financial literacy or whatever. It was just time. Like when Bitcoin crashed, I knew it was time for me to go to work. It wasn't time to actually run away. It wasn't time to sell the Bitcoin. I ain't had nothing to sell. Shit, I ain't had too much to sell. So to me, it was just about, all right, let's go ahead, put in work and see what I can get out of it.
Awesome. I mean, I find your story just to be so inspiring. And a lot of people, when you say, hey, Bitcoin can help the most needy people, you know, they're like, how can it help them? It's a speculative thing. They can't afford to speculate. I'm kind of curious, what's your response to that and talking about being at rock bottom and using Bitcoin to kind of improve your life? I guess, what's your response to that, like, criticism?
I mean, usually, so for the person who's trying to pose the argument, you know, there's just speculation. Well, it comes across like they haven't been in the shoes of someone who doesn't even know what the hell speculation is. Like, they haven't been in the shoes of someone who's never had to actually just say, just put caution to the wind. So, I mean, it's to the point for me, to the person who would say that, you know, you just really don't know what the hell you're talking about, or you just don't trust Bitcoin as you think you do. You're really not looking at this thing, because we're going to admit there's some folks here who just came here with a good amount of money, which is cool. They bought the Bitcoin and then, you know, they bought their Bitcoin and hey, they're making good money. It's outside of government control. They can, you know, turn their $2 million to $200 million. That's good. But a lot of those questions don't come from a place of someone who's desperate. It just comes like, well, you know, my other investment's doing good, but how can this change folks' life? My life is already good. You know what I'm saying? That's how I see that coming. So for folks who are, you know, are saying that, are making those speculations, you know, if you haven't done a day in the life of the shoes of someone who's going to have to do that, then it's hard to say that that's the actual truth. You know, you're just telling us, you know, 9 times out of 10, someone is telling a story that they're making up about another person's situation. However, there's no speculation to something that started off less than a penny. And when I got into it, $600, where's the speculation? Like I say that up to people all the time. Where are you seeing speculation? I saw someone the other day say, there is no market cap. Like, where are you seeing the speculation? The numbers are showing you. It's from zero to $600, 626 when I got there, to around about now, 50K. Where is this speculation? I can never go with the crowd of people, because more times than not, everyone who's doing the same thing is going to get the same results. I couldn't even stay in a conversation that long, because by design, by the numbers, where have you seen speculation? Like when people say, oh, I lost Bitcoin, they lost big. How? Did you lose your private keys? What? I mean, were you trying to do something in trade? Like what? Because if you were just having it there, I can't see the speculation. All I saw was, hell, it could go down. If it goes down, it could stay there. Okay, but what do you do? You know, like I can only go off of my current life experiences. So the only thing that could happen was Bitcoin was to go down in price, but we still have a decentralized money that worked. I didn't see no speculation. So that would be my response. It's just, you're coming from a place where you haven't had to actually go that deep into changing something for yourself.
So I'm curious about your book and like the motivation drivers behind it and kind of like your process and how you wrote your book. So just tell us a little bit more about that.
Okay. So the motivation behind the book, funny enough, I had been thinking about writing a book when I was in prison. Between 2011 and 2014, that was a thought of mine then. But the motivation came, I remember the first time Zay was on Fox News, and I called him. I said, man, you know, congrats, whatever. He didn't even say, thank you for the congratulations. He just said, so when you gonna write yours? I was like, all right. So then nice. I had this business coach, you know, she wrote a book. And she was like, hey, so when you gonna write your book? I'm like, well, goddamn, all right. I said, I'll start next week. And that was just that. It was a lot of people though telling me, man, you know, hell, you should write a book. People would love the story. And then in my own mind, I'm thinking like, you know, you're doing a lot of stuff here. And a lot of people might not have hope of where they are to see how they can get somewhere. So it's also a way to put a book out there to let people know it don't matter where the hell you start. You just got to start and not stop. So the motivation came from that. But deeper than that, it was just the fact that people who saw something, they were pushing me to do it because I might have sat on this for a while. Now, the process of writing the book, I remember in the very first part, I would wake up at like 4:30, 5 a.m., try to put down, you know, an hour to 2 hours on paper. And then I switched up the process. I just started voice recording it, transcribed it, edited it myself, and then the book started flying. You know, and then I was just speaking from memory and then editing it as it was going. But the motivation was really, you know, people like Zay, my business coach, and then just the fact that I really wanted to find a way to help people. You know, I wanted folks to know, like, yo, it truly does not matter as long as you just, you stick the shit out. It really does not matter. But people won't be able to hear that from an hour conversation or seeing you talk for 20 minutes. They'll just say, oh, shit, well, you know, that's good for you because you did it. But that won't work for me. I can't do all that. Well, you got to stop saying what the fuck you can't do. You know what I mean? So I would hear people talk like this all the time, and they would have like certain positions in business or in corporate America. I'm like, yo, how are y'all making all these excuses when you have the opportunity to change it? So that was the motivation behind the book, kid.
I love that. Love your story. Is there anything that you left out of your book that you wanted to have in it, but you just couldn't fit it?
To be honest, right about now, after I wrote that book, I really don't remember much of what's in there. It's kind of like when they ask Lil Wayne, you know, does he remember certain performances of songs? Like, man, damn, I said that in like March 2020. I ended it there on purpose. But there's not much I left out. I can't think of anything that I left out, to be completely honest. I can't think of much at all.
So, Justin, in terms of like the actual book, do you kind of want to like talk a little bit about, is it, are you telling your story? Are you kind of talking about the concept of bars to Bitcoin? I know you have a show right now that you host with the Black Bitcoin Billionaires. Would love to kind of just hear about what happened, you know, after Bitcoin like really became a big part of your life.
Well, in the book, it goes into like my story, right? So there's about 15 years of my story compiled in like 250 pages. And you'll see in the book where I started getting into Bitcoin, that's where everything changed and everything started clicking. And I personally wanted to leave, you know, the reader there for a reason, because now it's like, okay, you've read where I've been. You read how I got into Bitcoin, the things I did. So it's not something where I'm giving out instructions of how to set up a wallet. I share with people, you know, that I then in like, what, 2018, I tried to build a Lightning node with no programming skills, nothing. That probably wrecked my brain more than anything else in the world. But as far as like the actual insides of the book, it's a story of my life. And when it comes to the Bitcoin part, you'll just start seeing like, damn, there was a little bit of different things going on, you know, because I was still around 2016, 2017, up until probably about last year, 2020, you know, things as far as like a business thing, things were still just trying to work itself out. But I purposely left off in 2020 because I wanted the reader to see how all that I did started taking off now. Like this year alone was the best year of my entire probably life. I remember looking at Bitcoin Magazine in 2017. Never thought the day I'd be interviewed by him. This year alone, interviewed by Pump. Never thought that would happen. You know, never thought these things would happen. But you, I ain't gonna lie, I kind of figured something would happen. I'll say that. I figured something would happen. I'm not gonna just say it like that. But sometimes you don't know when and you don't know how consistent it'll be. But I purposely left to read it off right there just to let them know, like, for years and years and years, it's a little bit of a grind. But then once it turns, it starts turning, but you just got to be there. So that's the little insides of the book. And some parts of the book, it gets real. My editor said it gets kind of chilling. You know, I tell the story of me in prison And what the same guy I mentioned that got killed at the party, I thought I met a guy in prison that killed him. You know, so the book is rather raw, to be honest. I think Bitcoiners will appreciate it, though, because it'll have them tap in just a little bit more. You know, the book is rather raw, though. It won't be the average Bitcoin book, but it will be a great read.
Well, I'm excited for it, man. I ordered it and excited to get it in my hands. I guess before we continue with the interview, why don't you just like tell people where they can find the book right now?
Okay, cool. So you can always find the book on Amazon. Everybody knows you can go to Amazon. I also have the book on my website. And for me to make it a lot easier for anyone on here, if you wanted to purchase it now, you could go to the link in my bio and you go to that link and you'll see an option to buy it at Amazon or buy it from my website. And so if you buy it from Amazon, of course, you can get it in about 2 days. But if you go to my website where I have Bitcoin payments available, then it'll take a little while. But once I have the book, start the copy sent to me, I'll be able to send you an autographed copy. And the folks who participate in my pre-sale, like my man Josh down there, they'll have opportunity to win. Somebody might win $100 in Bitcoin. Might not be Josh, but it might be somebody. So you can go to my website. Both of the links are in the bio. They're real easy, real self-explanatory. If you're an Amazon person, go to Amazon. You want to support me all out, you can go to my website. And if you want to pay in Bitcoin, we could definitely take that too.
Amazing. I guess, Kit, I don't know if you have a question, but I definitely want to hear about the clubhouse and kind of like the work that you're doing today. And then maybe, Kit, you can take over.
So some of the things we do in Clubhouse, in the From Bars to Bitcoin Room specifically, I remember I was down there in Miami at the Bitcoin conference, and we had gotten an Airbnb. Some of the Black Bitcoin billionaires, it was me, Naja Roberts, Lamar. And I was just thinking like, man, you know, we're doing all this stuff in Black Bitcoin billionaires. And I was always thinking for years, like, you know, how do I bring this to guys or to women, people, anyone coming home from prison, how would I bring it to them? You know, because I'm not saying I'm the only one here, but it kind of feels that way sometimes. So how would you bring that information to them? And I'm like, well, you already have a platform where folks can come and just use Black Bitcoin billionaires. But what led me to actually to do it was because sometimes you get tired of talking to people who come up with excuses why they can't do nothing. And I was like, man, if I'm going to share free information with people, I want to share it to people who are going to actually do something. I knew guys from coming home from prison would do any damn thing. Most people do anything to go back. But I knew guys from prison, you could listen to them. They'll listen to you and they'll do it. I remember there's one guy in the group, his name is Todd. He's been locked up 30 years since the age of 18. And he said out of his own mouth, he said, man, you know, you are giving guys a way to eat. You showing guys how to do something that they never thought even was real to come home to. And that's kind of the thing I wanted to bring is like, what did I have to come home to? You know, I had to come home to these bullshit ass programs. And I would look at them like, what the fuck do you expect me to do here? Like, I'm going to go home and what, go work some other crazy ass job, or they're going to try to break my damn back? Like, the job I had, I remember going out trying to apply for jobs. I tried to apply for two men in the truck. I said, I know I can get this job. The man asked me, he said, you know, how's your driving history? He said, have you had an accident in the last 3 years? My mom, like, man, I ain't had no driving the last 3 years. I said, no. Had you had, you know, any traffic tickets? No. Car accidents? No. He looked at me like this shit was untrue. He said, you been locked up? I said, yep. He said, man, I can't hire you. Why the hell not? This is moving. Like, what are we talking about here? Can't hire you. He said that he didn't even look at me. And I experienced that over and over and over to the point I was like, man, I am not about to keep hearing the word no. If I'm going to go through this much hell, I might as well create my own shit and just go through that hell. At least it'll be something I can control, something that I can add value to. I don't have to go out and ask someone else for it. But I didn't continuously want that to be for the people. Like, I had this friend of mine. I actually found out he was in prison while I was in prison. And he was there with me when our friend got killed. So I wrote him a letter from the prison to where he was. And, you know, I remember when I came home, I said, yo, you know, you need some help. I don't have much, but I want to try to help. And within that, the spark was like, you know, in Black Bitcoin Billionaires, it's like, damn, we got over 125,000 people. I know y'all, either you or someone you know, have been in prison. How can I help? How can I add value? And then, like I know, like I said, guys in prison, I've seen people in prison make some of the most tremendous shit. I've seen a guy pop popcorn with no microwave. We built phone chargers just using batteries and tape and the little metal from the phone and some Brillo wire. I've seen the ingenuity and I've seen the greatness of what people say. And so while I was hearing Bitcoin, I'm like, man, this is where they need to come. This is where they need to come. Bitcoin. Nowhere else. What the hell else is going to be out there? Janitor? He 35 years old, locked up for 14 years, you're going to be a fucking janitor? You don't want to do that. You at least want to take chances. You at least want to put that genius to work. Come to Black Bitcoin Billionaires, come to Bitcoin. I wanted to be tested when I came home from prison. I said, if I go to college anywhere, I want to go to Harvard. If I was to go back to college, if I couldn't go to Harvard, I wasn't going to go. And I know I had gone to North Carolina A&T, but it was about the challenge. It was about me seeing, like, you know, what I was made of. But then Bitcoin came along. I'm like, wow. So I know the prison mind. I know someone's mindset who's really wanting to stay out, you know, and I know that, hell, the biggest thing would be no overseer. Ain't nobody in the way of your money. And then another big thing is, like, your success is based upon how much work you put in. I know guys from prison will put in work. I know some that won't. But the ones that will, shit, they might be a Bitcoin core dev before you know. That was the goal. That was the goal, to have someone who's probably better than me just be here. Like, it's two guys. One guy is named Ubeda. The other guy is Todd. And if you see Kate Booker down there, she's the woman who has a cohort called 21 Blue Freedom. And we also work together with her nonprofit called BTC Impact, where the goal is to...
Request to come up, Kate Booker.
Okay. And the goal, yeah, bring her up. And the goal there is to just have people, you know, your re-entry, just be into Bitcoin. Fuck it. Like, yo, there's no need to do that over there. I'm not trying to say don't, but there's no need to go to real estate. There's no need to go to none of that other stuff. Just come into Bitcoin. Just come here. And so then, you know, within that, right, it's like you can be brilliant here and you can learn while earning money. It doesn't matter to guys from prison. It won't matter that Michael Saylor is spending billions on Bitcoin. That shit won't matter to guys from prison, because guys in prison, you were taught not to count somebody else's pockets. That was the biggest baffling thing to me, was just like, oh, my God, I can't do this because, you know, it costs this much, or this billionaire is buying this or that. Like, bro, it don't fucking matter. Like, people would say, well, they have a lot of Bitcoin. Their Bitcoin does not matter. The amount of Bitcoin you have, anybody on the stage has, does not matter to me. It won't matter, because I don't benefit from anything that's in your wallet. And that does not mean that I can't still buy Bitcoin. It just means if I wanted a certain amount of Bitcoin, I had to put in a lot more work, a lot more ingenuity, and build something that is entirely dope. That's all that meant to me. It did not matter what anybody else had at all. The only thing that mattered, what I can do for me and how I can help others. And so in Black Bitcoin Billionaires, as of right now, it's a few other guys, but, you know, hell, we started out with just two people. Even if it's only two, that's cool, because that's how I've noticed this adoption happens here. If everybody knew the value of Bitcoin, Bitcoin would already be $1 million. If Bitcoin was so easy to grasp, we wouldn't even have this platform here. So it starts out slow. It always starts slow. It's like the start of an avalanche. But then it starts picking up speed. Matter of fact, it's just like Bitcoin. And I know once I kind of embodied how Bitcoin reacted, the honey badger, the never giving up, like, I was like, yo, shit, that's just me in general. I'm Bitcoin. Like, that's me right there. The price would do what it do, but that's me, you know? And during those times, you would hear all these people who had a great business. They sold their business, just went. If a guy can sell his business and just sell it all again to Bitcoin, I'm like, well, shit, what's it for me as someone who's broke as hell at home? I just dedicate your whole life here. What do you have to offer? Your whole life. You have to offer your time. The reason I didn't go get certain jobs, because I didn't want to spend 8 hours a day of my day building someone else's stuff when I could at least be at home learning something about Bitcoin. I knew the value of having your value of having control over your time. And that's what a lot of guys from prison know. And they will end up surpassing people in this space. I said, yo, I want y'all to read Mastering Bitcoin Edition 1, 2, and 3. I don't give a damn if it's too thick. I don't give a damn if it takes you forever. then what you want to do next. Then I want you to do what you know how to do. Put the pieces of the dots together, and the people, we already have a community of folks who will help you. Go from there. So that's what we're doing, Black Bitcoin Billionaires. That was the purpose of the room. And, you know, if you want widespread adoption, then you can't just talk to hedge fund managers all day.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I love what you're doing. All right, Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about our newest sponsor. This show is brought to you by Ledin.io. I have been super, super impressed with the guys over at Ledin. I've actually known the co-founders, Adam and Maurizio, for a very long time. I've had the pleasure to watch them build Ledin up from a tiny, tiny startup to now a super impressive institutional grade Bitcoin and crypto lender. Y'all, I'm so impressed with these guys. They are offering some of the best rates out there. I don't think anyone even comes close to touching them. You can get 6.1% APY on your first two Bitcoin that you deposit into Ledin interest accounts, and you can get 8.5% on USDC deposits. I mean, I know all the competitors. They're not even close. If you're going to put your crypto and your Bitcoin into an interest account, Ledin is by far the best. And on top of that, like I said, these guys are hardcore Bitcoiners and they know the products and the services that Bitcoiners want and appreciate. They came up with B2X. It allows you to put your Bitcoin in. They leverage it up and you can, with one click of the mouse, get twice the exposure to Bitcoin. So if you're super bullish, Ledin has you covered with a super, super easy way to get leverage with B2X. And then on top of that, they know that Bitcoiners care about your reserves. They know that Bitcoiners don't like under-reserved and not full-reserved financial institutions. So they are pushing the frontier in transparency in the digital asset lending space. And they are the first digital asset lender to do a full proof of reserves and proof of attestation through a Mariano LLC, a public accounting firm. So the Ledin guys, they know what Bitcoiners like. They are legit. I encourage you guys to check them out. Do your own research and go to Ledin.io. That is Ledin.io and learn more. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about The Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium market intelligence newsletter. This is a no fluff, hard-hitting, incredible newsletter going deep into the market, helping you understand what's happening with derivatives, what's happening on-chain, what's happening in macro, what's happening with the narrative, and what's happening with the tech. My man, Dylan LeClaire, is an absolute savant. He is making his name known in the Bitcoin community, getting shout-outs left and right, getting on podcasts left and right, and him and his team are bringing you everything that you need to know about Bitcoin. You don't even have to be on Bitcoin Twitter. You can ignore every other newsletter. This is the newsletter to rule them all. Go over to members.bitcoinmagazine.com, sign up today. And if you use promo code MACRO, you get a full month for free. You have nothing to lose. What are you waiting for? Sign up, see the incredible work that Dylan and his team are putting out. And if you don't like it, just unsubscribe. You don't pay a dime. But if you do, it's going to be well worth the sats in investment in understanding Bitcoin and gaining the confidence to continue to invest in Bitcoin and making the right moves around Bitcoin. And it's going to be well worth every single Satoshi. Again, can't recommend it enough. That is members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code MACRO. Do it today. Miss Kimberly, I would love to hear what your story and what you're working on and, you know, how you two are working together.
Outstanding. Let me first give a head nod to my brother, Justin. Without a doubt, I mean, he makes it sound easy. He has a colored bit of his life. But what I want you guys to know is the returned citizens, they don't really take this path, right? That's what recidivism is. It is because once they are incarcerated, and especially for longer periods of time, like plus 5 years, that becomes their way of life. They become what's called institutionalized. But I'm so very happy to say that not only is Justin my acquaintance, but he's my brother. We've done things together and we will continue to do things together. So I first want to acknowledge his mission of sharing Bitcoin and its literacy. And he is astute in this space. So he can argue with the best of them. And what he's saying comes from the heart. And I really need you guys to know that. For 21 Blue Freedom, that's the cohort that he referred to. That is a cohort of 7 returned citizens that were handpicked that I decided to case manage to instruct them in Bitcoin 101 basics and introduce them to Bitcoin. None of them knew anything about Bitcoin. In fact, some of them didn't even know how to pronounce it. They've gone from that in May to today holding their own wallets, to self-custody, to understanding graphs, to understanding self-sovereignty, to investing, hodling. They understand the vocabulary, the theory and philosophy. They've read the white paper. They've read Zay's Bitcoin in Black America. They've read Justin's first book. They've read Fred Brandon's first book. They have followed Naja Roberts. These are guys, just like Justin mentioned, these are guys that are well-read. They know what to do with their time. And they jumped into this both feet. And they understand, like something that Justin referred to, this is sovereignty to them. The idea that they could actually hold wealth and the government cannot take it from them, nor can the government at this point in period of time tell them how much they can hold and what they can do with it at this point in period of time. These guys are embracing this as their shot at generational wealth, that they don't have to go to their corner banks and have someone look down their nose and their bifocals at them and say that they can't get this loan today. These guys have decided to embrace Bitcoin, to embrace this ecosystem, and to learn. And every Wednesday, we have a 2-hour Zoom call. And I got to tell you, average time served between those 7 guys is 22 years. 22 years. Todd, that he mentioned, served 30. I have another individual that served just a little above 30, one that served 17, another that served 3 different terms that equal up to 15. Can you believe that today these men have decided that this is how they're going to live their lives? So they've had to be encouraged. I've had people like T-Mac, Lamar Wilson, actually, T-Mac actually gave them their first Satoshis. Lamar Wilson donated to 21 Blue Freedom cohort and gave them more, giving them something that they can manage. And when they first saw it, then they started just dollar cost averaging for themselves. They understand. They know how to buy the dip. They know how to read the graphs. Justin came in and donated his course, his Bitcoin 101 course. These guys took that. At any time they're on Clubhouse, you might see them moderating. These guys went from not knowing anything about Bitcoin to moderating in one of the largest Bitcoin clubs on Clubhouse. Moderating. That's how dedicated they are to this. So November 1st, I let them go and I have written everything down and we've done the case management and sort of document their successes and their challenges. But without a doubt, to me, we cannot look at mass adoption without looking at the least of us, without considering our returned citizens. And even at Bars to Bitcoin on Mondays at 8 p.m. on Clubhouse, we've had gentlemen who are currently incarcerated listening and asking questions because they're permitted to do so. So I cannot tell you all, if you have returned citizens in your circle, Black, white, Puerto Rican, polka dot, do not exclude them from this conversation. You'll be surprised at what they already know about circular economies, as Justin talked about. BTC Impact, my nonprofit that's co-founded with Valton Eason, and some of you all might know Marshall Long, the OG guru. BTC Impact is boots on the grounds, knocking on doors, going to churches, going to community centers, meeting with elected officials. We met with the mayor of Miami's office, chief of staff, Nick Pasquale, to lay out what our plans are, to lay out what we want to see done in the Black and brown communities across the country. It's important to us that we not be removed from these conversations. Not that we have a seat at the table, but that we build our own table. We build this table together. So that's what BTC Impact is all about. And we're not going to exclude them from the mining conversation as well. As I speak to you guys right now, I'm in Fort Worth learning about Bitcoin mining. I got my first S9. I was told that it's not a space for me. And I refuse to believe that. So I believe that we need to teach our youth about all things Bitcoin from beginning to end. And that's what BTC Impact is about. It's about partnering with community leaders. It's about not leaving single moms out of the conversation, not leaving those alone that know what generational poverty is. So for us, that's the mission, that's the goal, and that's what we're going to do. And thank you. I honor you, Bitcoin Magazine, because my guys, they read you. They read your article. It's like you're their New York Post. They read it. And I just so appreciate what you guys are doing here and nodding to Justin. And thank you all for what you continue to do.
Thank you a lot. No, I mean, that means a tremendous amount. And I appreciate you sharing all that work and doing all that work. I'm kind of curious to everyone on stage. I think I asked Justin this question, but like, what about Bitcoin do like the naysayers kind of get wrong when they think about its potential beyond moon boy marketing, really? Why are they failing to kind of see how deep this thing runs and the potential it kind of offers a lot of the people that are used to being said no to? Really, that's kind of like the thread that dominates this conversation.
So, y'all got Bitcoin. What's up, Chris? Sir?
What's going on, everybody? Shout out to Bitcoin Magazine. Shout out to you, Justin. Congratulations on your book. I've been a little quiet lately, you know, handling business and doing what I need to do to fiat mine to buy more Bitcoin, right? But I see you on your journey, and definitely can't wait to get that book. I'll send you some Bitcoin. I definitely need to order that. I didn't know there was a pre-order, so you already know I already shared the book and all that good stuff. So let me know where I can send this Bitcoin so I can get that book off.
Oh, don't worry. You got you.
Appreciate it. All right, cool. But I think Americans, I always say this when I was back in Clubhouse back in the day, I always say the reason why Americans don't, at least in my opinion, Americans and Europeans, we don't really understand the struggles of the third world countries and people that are really less fortunate. Like even in America, we're blessed beyond measures. Like we have no idea how blessed we are. And Bitcoin is that freedom and is that, it's like that shiny golden ticket that the underdog has, such as Justin was saying. So in my opinion, I think it's just because we're so blessed and we're so like, we don't realize how good we got it here in America and that we're blessed enough to look at Bitcoin as an investment versus a way out and an exit strategy and a way to change our lives and to store value and to have money for our children's children and to have generational wealth. So I think it's, once again, it's just the way we look at things and how we've been grown up, how we've been conditioned. Even the hoodest of the hood here in America, if you go to Haiti, you go to DR, you go to Jamaica, you go to Africa, you go to Afghanistan, the most ghetto of the hood here in America is A1 in all these other fucking countries. And we need to realize that. And our marketing is more about making money and getting more money. And it's bigger than that. So with that, I digress. Shout out to you, Justin. Can't wait to get that book. Thanks for having me on stage.
No problem, sir. No problem. Yeah. Bitcoin Chris is my guy. So here's the thing too, right? Here's what's beyond funny. So I remember I read this book by Naveen Jain. It's called Moonshots. And he was explaining something similar, just how like Chris was, you know, that there really, quote unquote, compared to poverty around the world, there really is no like poverty for real, right? Like we have running water. You can't really go, if you go hungry in America, you're really not trying hard enough. I mean, these folks give out food. They got food banks everywhere, right? But what ends up happening is the fact that when you're, you know, berated years after years, like we're not even going to play. Another reason why I'm so hard on Bitcoin is because I'm not shy to know the hell my people came here as a slave, right? And so I remember I was at Washington, D.C. at the National Museum, the African American National Museum, and I saw how much money was made off of slavery in like, what, 1816 to 1818. It was almost like, don't quote me really, but I think it was like almost like a couple billion or $1 trillion. And that's a big gap. I got to remember the number, but it was astronomical numbers at that time. And I said, what does that turn into? That turns into a country. All right. So then, you know, like we on Clubhouse. Most Americans are like, yeah, you know, Bitcoin is this, this, and this. I'm like, how can you sit here and just believe that a free, open money, open source community is what you say it is? It's not what you say it is. Like, this isn't, you don't have that right here right now. Like, yeah, someone can look at Bitcoin as an investment, but me, I can't even be a hodler. My first time using Bitcoin was for surviving. Like, when Zay had moved to California and I was like, bruh, he said, man, listen, I want you to do something for me, pay you in Bitcoin. Like, I used to get paid by him in Bitcoin to research all the altcoins that they would talk about in the Gentleman of Crypto in 2017. Like, I would sit at home, research things, send them the email, get Bitcoin. I had to live off of Bitcoin. When they first started their show, they were like, yo, we're going to give out Bitcoin. Whoever listens to the show and gives us the secret word, we're going to send you some Bitcoin. Them folks used to send like $50 in 2016. I used to live off of Bitcoin before becoming a hodler. Now, granted, majority of people can sit here and say, well, how, and yeah, America is the greatest country on earth, depending upon, you know, the circumstances. But when you're in a predicament where it's just the barriers are there, you know, the barriers are there. And when people are speaking of it as if it's one way, that's what their mindset is. Yeah, Bitcoin is way more than just an investment. It's already a medium of exchange, but this is why it's kind of bad to only have one type of person or a particular type of people speak on Bitcoin, because it makes it seem as if it's only meant for folks with money or you already missed out. There is no fucking missing when you look at the numbers of Bitcoin. There is no missing. We're going to be in the early stages. This is what, 2021? We're going to be in the early stages of Bitcoin for the next 119 years. What the hell are you missing? You know what I mean? What are you missing? What did you miss out on? Bitcoin is going to bring the world's first septillionaire. What are you missing out on? So it's how Bitcoin is talked about through old media. Sell this, sell that, sell this. You don't even know what the hell you're getting into. So it's about who you got to have for a global free moving money. Oh, Elon Musk just made a text. Let's see if we can get him in here. Everybody send out a link. See if we can get Elon to tag Elon. See if we can get him in here. That'll be so neat. But really, you got to think about it. Like, you can't put a label on an open source tech that has money and value attached to it. You know, you just can't do that. So I see y'all brought up Zay. He told me in the back chat, I'm just leaving the hospital, so I can't talk, but I can listen. Just had tonsil surgery. So if Zay doesn't come off the mic, that's exactly the reason why. But again, it's dangerous to look at Bitcoin one way. It's dangerous to only put people out there who can speak on Bitcoin one way, because that's not what it is. And yeah, in here in America, where the folks who have the most also have the biggest voice, that's still not the truth, though, right? Because you got people out here like myself. I'm telling you, when I tell you anything legal and ethical that could be done to get Bitcoin, I did. You feel me? Like, that was the opportunity. That was just what it was. Zay mentioned to me, he mentioned a lot of times, yeah, I sold plasma for Bitcoin. People are giving up their DNA for something. Feel what I mean? So it's dangerous just to say Bitcoin is just an investment that's going to, you know, 10x or 100x my money and it's going to give me it. Man, that's not all this is. Like, and shit, everybody here has had a 10x if you've been in long enough, you know? And to me, it's all about opportunity. Like, let's look at this. Right about now, I've been home from prison 5 years. I have more experience in the space than one of the richest men in the world. What other industry, what other platform, what other part of the world would you be able to say that in? Do I have more money, Elon? Not yet. But the point of the matter is, where else would you be able to say that other than in Bitcoin? Nowhere. So it's really not just about who's going to have the biggest investment, who can spit the farthest, none of that goofy shit. This is about people like, to the folks that we teach, like me and Zay have gone into a strip club in Atlanta teaching about Bitcoin. Might be the best decentralized exchange out there. Free flowing movement cash, have somebody have a QR code, buy Bitcoin. You know what I'm saying? But this is what this is. Me and Zay have also taught children at camps. Like, this is serious to us, because it's only been the being locked out, like financially with redlining, you being killed. Like, a lot of times folks who talk, you've never had to be black in America to understand that. So not to suck the air out of the room, but it's just dangerous to sit here and say Bitcoin is one thing when it's already been created as an open source tech in the open source community.
I'd love to hear more about your course. I've heard a little bit about it, but if you go into detail, did you make your course first, write your book first? Kind of what your course is about and where people can find it as well too.
I actually created a course first. It was real funny because it wasn't until 2020 that I created a course. I was in Bitcoin for what, 4 years? I didn't create a course until, what, year four? And that happened, really, the course happened because a woman reached out to me who has an investment, a real estate investment group. And she said, hey, would you teach my group about Bitcoin? I'm like, yeah, sure. So even there, me and Zay collabed on the course. It was like, what you think I should do first? He said, well, show them this part, show them this part. And then I was like, yeah, so I'm just going to teach them what they don't normally learn. Like, yeah, pretty much. And so, you know, show them hardcore basics, like real Bitcoiner stuff, like how to check a blockchain, how to check a transaction on the blockchain, how to notice the difference between this type of FUD and what's real, how to buy Bitcoin, where to buy Bitcoin. Like, I didn't push a certain company that I'm not going to sit here and say, but, you know, how could you go about using Bitcoin in a way that it was meant to be used? And I will always drive home the fact that decentralization is the king here. It does not matter. Like, nothing that happens outside of Bitcoin will affect Bitcoin. So how to use it, how to send Bitcoin there, how to use a Bitcoin ATM. I might drop some gems because people, they have this blockage and it's new. You should. So I might say, well, what if I wanted to have my Bitcoin go to my cold storage wallet, but I can't get it there? I'm like, well, how about you just print off the QR code, take it to the ATM, scan it, it'll be on your cold wallet before it goes to your phone. Something simple, you know, but it's not really that simple to people. Show them how to accept it for their business. Show them the difference between centralization and decentralization. Show them the difference of why there's only one decentralized coin compared to the other 9,000 on coin market cap. I really created that course, number one, so people could save like years of research on YouTube. Because YouTube now isn't the YouTube where I came into Bitcoin, where you can really find real authentic people giving you value. I mean, hell, the only show I know about now that's still giving out that value is Gem of the Crypto. Most other people might have fallen off, and that's cool, but it's not the same as it was then. So now, you know, how to keep somebody's mind straight. Do they all do it? No, because people are able to do what they want. However, I do say, hey, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't have to send your Bitcoin. Like, if you don't press send, nothing will happen. You won't lose anything. You won't get scammed. If you don't press send, you won't get scammed. So it's just a lot about different ways of handholding, giving people the real, I don't like the word basic, but even basic knowledge in Bitcoin is next level of somebody. So breaking it down to where they can digest it. So yeah, I made that first. I made the course first. The book didn't come until this year. But I made the course first, and they can find it on my website again, bitcoinvegan.com. Go to the shop page, and yeah, they can find that there. And I see we have Bitwage on stage. That's what's up. I want to actually throw something out there towards Bitwage, but we'll get there in a minute. But did that help, Ms. Kit?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for that overview. That was good.
Justin, I think you're talking about, you're teaching them fundamentals. So maybe not basics, but the fundamentals. And Bitwage, go shoot Justin a DM or something. He has a proposition for you. Justin, and, you know, again, the other people on stage, feel free to jump in too. But it seems as though, you know, you have a really strong understanding of both open source and decentralization. That's a really big part of, like, your educational message. One, why is that so important for Bitcoin? And two, like, why is that such, like, a big pillar in the fundamentals that you try to teach?
It's important because when it comes to money, and, you know, Ethereum people might not like this, but I don't give a damn. When it comes to money, there's only one open source decentralized thing on the entire planet. It's Bitcoin. Why did everybody laugh? It's Bitcoin. Chris, chill out. So the reason I say that, though, is because when you really think about it, there's been so much control over money. It's sad. And I teach those fundamentals, and I'm glad you said that, Chris. I teach those fundamentals because those are the fundamentals that is that, like, if I just talk price all day, then they'll think everything's the same. Well, everything goes up. Well, in their eyes, it kind of does. I mean, by numbers, everything does go up in this space, right? I mean, shit, when I first came into space, I think, what, Ethereum was $5. Everything does go up. Well, not all of them, but a little bit of them go up. A good majority of them go up. So if I was to just talk money and talk appreciation and talk price, everybody would think everything's the same. But when I go in from the angle of, you know, open source and decentralization, well, everything isn't the same now. You know what I mean? Everything isn't the same. And that even the current money system you're in is not the same. So instead of me just planting the seed of money, because that'll just put you down this money chase. Well, let me get this money here, or I can go to the dog coin. I know the proper name, trust me. Or I can go buy a chia pet, or I can go do this, or I can go do that. I mean, you can, but you know, if you're not really an OG like that, you're going to get wrecked terribly. Even if you are, they still get wrecked. But without the fundamentals, you'll think everything's the same. And when I do teach the fundamentals, and I might say some wild shit, because I do tend to say that, you'll start seeing the truth behind what I say. Like, I remember I was on the podcast and someone asked me about Robinhood. I said Robinhood was trash. People thought I was crazy. They condemned me, all this other shit. 6 days later, what happened with Robinhood? Right? So when you start giving people what decentralization is, what open source is, they never lived that life when it came to money. So once you show them that, then that's the real, but that's a slower approach. But once you show them that and you never deviate, like I never deviate from what I say, you still think the bank is trash? Yes. Do you still think? Yes, yes, yes. Well, I don't see it yet. Well, just keep on living. You'll see it. Because once you give them the true fundamentals, I don't have to change my message. I just have to speak the truth and what it is. And I had a friend the other day just messaged me saying, man, you saved me $1,000. I said, why? I almost got scammed. I said, oh, shit. And he works for Wells Fargo. And he said, man, you know, publicly, they've been talking shit about Bitcoin, but they have research R&D teams trying to see what it is. I'm like, well, you know, I'm glad you heard it from me first, because otherwise you'll just continuously go back into this burning house of people just controlling funds. And if it wasn't for the open source, if it wasn't for the decentralization, Bitcoin would not have been able to save the world during the pandemic.
Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about the Texas Blockchain Summit put on by the Texas Blockchain Council. This conference is all about Bitcoin, and man, their lineup is absolutely spectacular. Cynthia Lummis, Hester Pierce, Warren Davidson, Nick Bhatia, Alex Gladstein, Will Cole. That's just the tip of the spear. There are so many big names going to be a part of this event. The Texas Blockchain Council is doing an absolute incredible job, and they are 100% focused on Bitcoin and self-sovereignty that comes from adopting Bitcoin. The most sovereign place in America is Texas. Austin is the capital. October 8th is the place. Go to the Texas Blockchain Summit. You can save a beautiful 25% if you use code BTC in all caps. That is the special code for the Bitcoin Magazine audience. Use code BTC, save 25% off your ticket. Don't miss it. This is going to be absolutely sick. Peace. Bitcoiners, let's take a break from the content, and I want to tell you about Coolbix. Coolbix is an awesome Bitcoin hardware wallet that's been around for a really long time. They are building an amazing Bitcoin wallet called the Cool Wallet Pro. The Cool Wallet Pro is state-of-the-art Bitcoin hardware wallet technology. Its form factor is like a credit card. You can put it into your wallet, and it is designed to go with you on the go. So that way, even when you're on the go, you can have the benefit of a two-factor hardware wallet design when you're trying to spend your Bitcoin. So you can have your Bitcoin wallet UX on your phone and make it really easy to scan, decide what you want to do, but then you sign with a Coolbit X, which is in your back pocket. It is tamper-proof. It is waterproof. It is flexible. It has an awesome secure element in it. And it is a really awesome way in order to have some more flexibility yet security when you're taking your Bitcoin on the go. I personally am a fan of this idea of making Bitcoin into a medium of exchange and making it into something that people use. I know it's going to take time, but they are working on the UX for making that possible in as secure a way possible. So have some peace of mind. Check out the Cool Wallet Pro from Coolbix, and thank you to them for sponsoring this podcast.
Okay, Chris, either you guys want to jump in on this question?
Yeah, you were talking about why decentralization is different from centralization. So like for me, I teach financial literacy, for an example. So a lot of people go and try to get credit cards and they get denied. They try to get lines of credit, they get denied. with Bitcoin, for an example. I mean, I know there's services out there, not going to name any, where you can collateralize your Bitcoin, but that would be a personal decision. I don't recommend you do that, but that is an option if you're going to, if you're trying to make investments, you know, like Justin was saying earlier, if you just go back to 2017, I actually tweeted this the other day. I looked on my Coinbase app and I was like, let me go check out the earliest purchase that I bought of Bitcoin. Let me just scroll down these transactions. And I don't use Coinbase now. I use Swan Bitcoin. Shout out to Swan and Corey and everybody there. But anyways, I scrolled down on my Coinbase and I was like, all right, let me check and see my last Bitcoin purchase. And it was back in 2017. I bought like $50 worth. And guess what? It 10X, guys, in just 3 short years. The thing is with these dollars, not everybody knows about the Cantillon effect and about being close to the money printer. People aren't financially literate, so they don't even know what they have to do to get money from the banks, you know? So with it being controlled by the big banks, they're going to continue to print money, which is going to continue to devalue the money, which is really making the poor even more poor, because nobody really owns assets like that except for the rich, you know? And they understand the tax rules and they understand the laws. And we're like consumers. And like I said earlier, we're accustomed to a consumption lifestyle. It's like, we don't understand the kind of trap that you're in until you go down and you take the orange pill. Max and Stacy talks about this all the time. And it's just crazy that we don't even understand, a lot of people don't even understand the monetary system and the policy that we have. So being controlled and not being controlled. Like Justin was saying, if you're in prison, if you made a mistake, I know lots of people have made a mistake before, right? So if they made a mistake, they went to jail and they did what they had to do. They come out, they can't get a job. They can't go back to normal. And that's controlled by the system and the monetary policy and laws that are outdated. Like, that's backwards. Bitcoin, it liberates them for anybody, not just those people, but the most underserved and the most taken advantage of people that need it the most, unfortunately, don't understand it. So that's what we do. We always try to share that message. And unfortunately, a lot of people only care about the number going up. So that's the way to get their attention. But then when you have their attention, you got to break it down. Just put it in ways that I think they'll understand.
Before someone else goes, Chris says something very powerful, right? And I'm going to follow up with this. Have an education on financial literacy, right? The detriment of not doing that, what would that have you doing? Well, it'll have you going to prison. You'll do anything for money, right? You'll go to prison. You might sell drugs, bring someone. I don't know. You do anything. Because really, when you don't have money, when you don't have the basics met, you are going to go insane. It is crazy to think that you can sell drugs in an environment and in a country where they said it's illegal and they lock up person after person after person after person that you see, they get locked up and you go right in line with them. It's because all y'all are fucking insane. However, it deals with the detriment of financial literacy is this. People go to prison for money. Most people I've met in prison, right, went to prison to get money. It's not because they're a bad person. Because hell, I mean, shit, we can say that about everybody on this call. We can say that about the people who sit in government positions. So it's not that they're a bad person. It's not that they were born evil. It's the fact that you don't have money and you're trying to do something to get it, right? But here's the detriment. You go to prison, and it don't matter if you go for a year, 3 years. You go to prison to try to get some money that is worth less than when you get out. That's the detriment of not having financial literacy. Like I said before, there's a guy, a brother named Todd, did 30 years. When he went to prison, the dollar was worth like, what, 90-some cents. When he came out, the dollar was worth 85 cents. You went to prison for money that lost its value while you were sitting in there. That's fucking insane. That's the detriment of not having financial literacy. You will go do anything for money that don't hold its value. So when you really start looking at it, it's like, damn, that's the detriment of finance. You kill people over some shit that don't hold its value. You don't know nothing about money, but you want to put your whole life on the line for some shit that has no value, that doesn't hold its value. It's a dangerous game. People are rotting inside of a prison for money that does not hold the value that it had when they first went in.
I think, too, we cannot negate to mention and underscore everything that Justin said. Add to that the unbanked. Add to that those without proper documentation to even get a bank account. You see countless check cashing places that exploit the unbanked in every neighborhood. decentralization helps fill in that gap. And when Justin is speaking about financial literacy, we address a population that's either A, never had that conversation in their households, or B, generationally have suffered through poverty from great grandma to current mom. So to break those practices and break those traditions, to even educate them with financial literacy, why not add the conversation of Bitcoin? Why not show them how this can fill in the gap of not only financial literacy, but saving and saving for the future? And what does that look like? I find that to be the most challenging thing when I'm speaking to anyone, despite their color or socioeconomic background. The idea of holding on to this asset and not cashing it out. But that comes from our fiat system that says, if it's worth X amount of dollars, cash it out. So people like Justin and myself and Naja and Lamar, we're having constant conversations because without that proper financial literacy and people understanding what saving is all about, then even when we instruct them on the fundamentals of Bitcoin, we have to underscore it with hodling and not chasing after the dollar. It defeats the purpose. That's one of the largest challenges that we have in educating. But we're willing to take that on, without a doubt. We're willing to take that on because it makes no difference to know about Bitcoin and know how to invest in it, but you're going to cash it out at top dollar. So we're teaching the underserved, the disenfranchised, and the unbanked what it looks like to be banked on a blockchain, to have transparent transactions. What is this trustless? We're making sure that they understand they will no longer be excluded from these conversations. But not only will they not, neither will their children or their children's children or even their unborn children, if they just follow the principles.
Y'all on fire in here, man. This room is fucking lit.
I know, man. It's an incredible conversation. You know, thank you guys so much for bringing it. And I'm just kind of curious too, like, when it comes to education, what should Bitcoiners be focused on to kind of spread the message in the most palatable way possible?
You mean like the entire Bitcoin community?
I mean, if you could put a sign up to like the people who are preaching about Bitcoin right now and get them to rechannel a new energy or an energy that might be a little bit more useful for communicating Bitcoin, how would you do that? And I know that's a tough question.
No, it's
maybe
really
you,
not
Justin,
tough.
You start. Yeah, okay, you go for it, Justin.
I'm gonna tell you this.
Also, I also want to say that, Justin, let me know who you want to come up if there's anyone in the crowd that wants to come up. You know, I'm trying not to just let just anyone on stage.
Okay, so I do see some people. If y'all want to come up, just hit me up in the back chat and I got you. So really what I would say to that though is this. Bring up my man Josh and bring up Nature. And bring up P down there too. I've seen him on Clubhouse a while.
P's Bitcoin Magazine.
Yeah, I know. He's really lit. Bring up, I think, Claire Raise Her Hand and Eastside Tony. But I went to a Clubhouse room with, you know, some OG Bitcoiners, I guess if that's what y'all want to call them. Some older Bitcoiners. And I was just listening, you know, the whole approach of getting upset or, you know, trying to condemn someone. I told him, I was like, bro, you know why we, another reason, because I just got fed up. You're not really looking at this as you would business. Because what do you do in business and in marketing, right? You tailor your message towards the audience. You got to speak with the other person in mind, right? And so I told people, I said, bro, y'all don't have no fucking people skills. You don't have no people skills. You don't know how to have a conversation. You don't have rapport. You're not really thinking about the person on the other side of the fucking conversation. And it's like, I understand that as a Bitcoiner, you've caught hell for years. I get that, man. I went vegan 6 months before Bitcoin. And so what you think I was going through? People were talking shit about me being vegan. Oh, you're not going to have enough protein. People talking shit about Bitcoin. You don't know enough. You're going to fail. All this other shit. So I get the fact that you're upset or, you know, you come with some different energy. I get that shit. But if you want mass adoption, then you got to understand how to speak to people. It does not really matter. And it's about patience. And I get it. Like, trust me, I understand the have fun standpoint shit. However, like in Clubhouse, you know, you have folks who really don't know much and they're asking questions. And I've had to stop myself, be like, well, what in the hell are you talking about? But it's to the where, like, you have to have rapport. And I had to learn these things because when I was an entrepreneur, how do you get sales? How do you get people to talk to you? How do you do this? How do you do that? So I would read books on how to hold these conversations and have rapport with somebody or try to really get to where they are. But it's the skill of communication. If folks want Bitcoin to grow, then you got to have a better skill of communication. Like, I had a room. I invited this guy. His name was Derek Gott. He was a hostage negotiator. He has this book called Ego, Authority, and Failure. And he's the partner to this guy who has a book called Never Split the Difference, named Chris Voss. And the reason I went that route, I'm like, well, how the hell does the FBI get people just to say, here, take me to jail? Take me to jail, man. I'm ready. How the hell do they get you to say that shit? So I would study, you know, how police and the law enforcement would talk to people in interrogation rooms. How do they get you to do this? Right. And so when he came into the room, man, we're going to have him again. So, you know, follow me on here so you get an update because it's going to be great. Like, he even broke down the best way to go about getting VC funding. So, I mean, if you really have a problem with negotiating, when I post up when he's going to be there, have your ass there, be ready to either buy something from him or, you know, sign up for his stuff because it's real. But I had to learn how to communicate. Like, for instance, how I got a Bitcoin Magazine interview. I hit y'all up. Hey, how you doing? Communication, how to speak. Hey, how you doing? Y'all mind if I get a story? I didn't have no PR. I just understood the knowledge of how to have a conversation. So it's nothing more than that. It's really nothing more than that. Getting out of your own comfort zone to realize, yeah, I'm smart, but I'm dumb as hell when it comes to talking to people. I've seen it all the time. And, you know, you can't just always sit here and say, well, yeah, you know, computer guys, all they do is code all day. Nobody trying to hear all that shit, man. Nobody trying to hear that shit. If you want mass adoption, if you want to be liked, then you need to learn how to hold a conversation. And that's really what I feel is the only thing. No one is actually trying to listen. They're just ready to say what they know.
Nature, you said, welcome to the stage. You guys want to add to the conversation?
Yeah. What's up, CK? This is a great room. I think Bitcoin Vegan is spot on in terms of the communication, because if we want Bitcoin to be a global reserve currency, it has to take a global perspective, right? And that's taking all of our angles of seeing in our culture and our way of thinking, and we have to embody that, and we have to embrace that, and we have to welcome that. So my focus really is creating platforms for groups that have been most economically disenfranchised historically, right? And showing how Bitcoin has solved their issues, how they were able to circumvent different monetary policies that have suppressed them over time. I think Alex Gladstein has been doing a great job with first with the CFA franc in Togo and Cameroon, and then also in Palestine, how the most disenfranchised groups are using Bitcoin to liberate themselves from suppression. So I think culture is important for mass adoption. Culture is humongous. We bring culture. I know with Vegan, I know Josh, there's a lot of BBB people in here. I think that's going to be so crucial because, as you were saying, like, if you tell, I was joking with a couple people, I was like, if you tell a Black woman, have fun staying poor, you look her in the face and say, it's never going to go well. Like, I don't care. You can say, like, here's $1 million, something like that, but have fun staying poor. Like, she might reject that. And I'm not just saying, it's anybody. It's a way of communicating. And if we want to expand the global adoption, we have to have the communicators to talk to all the different people because we're all a part of this and we're all receptive to different messaging. And we understand that the origins might be cyberpunk, like techie, and then it graduated to maybe like the hedge fund Wall Street ideal. But you have to understand that's a very, very small
minority of the population, the global population. If the aim is a global reserve currency, if the aim is to get citizens from Nigeria, El Salvador, Bolivia, you know, Sri Lanka to adopt this, their perspective has to be not only given a platform, but highlighted. So anything that I can do in that way to lift those voices, I think the hashtag Bitcoin is for everyone, I think that's what it's called. That's great. We got to keep that up because at some point in time, and I'm going to quit because I know I'm kind of going, but at some point in time, when they say first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, the real fighting stage is going to be that ESG, like, oh, well, this is not for everybody. Most people who hold it is already from the economic elite, da-da-da-da-da. It's people who from disenfranchised groups who don't own this. So this only further widens the gap of economic disparity, right? That's what's going to come, right? So we need to get ahead of that and show that Bitcoin is a narrative of a humanitarian effort. It's humanitarian first and foremost, and it helps those who are under economic suppression to liberate themselves. So if we focus on that and the communication, having the right people, sending the message to the right people, I think we're able to accomplish that. That's me.
Just want to throw this out there. We'll probably wrap this guy up in about 10 minutes, but I want to give Eastside a chance to chime in, and then maybe we can do last words.
Hello, hello. Vegan, congratulations on your book release. I'm going to have to DM you for an autographed copy a little bit later. I wanted to speak on this stuff, man, because it really hits close to home for me. You know, during my 20s, I was really a spreader of death and destruction, and it was nothing good. And you get addicted to making fiat. And that addiction is hard to break. You know, you have girls, you have money, you got cars, you got a lifestyle. It trains you to be a certain type of way. And now that I found Bitcoin, a lot of people say I'm like evangelical with it, but it's true because mutually preserved preservation instead of mutually assured destruction, right? Like it helps people instead of hurts people. And I just wanted to get that out, man. Like it's definitely changed my life. And I just hope that everybody else can understand that the fiat, there's a lot of unlearning to be done in the fiat world. And one of the best ways right now that I found is just be like, yo, you know, I'm good enough. I'm going to give you $5 worth of Bitcoin, right? And there's multiple ways of doing that. But I think if you really care about somebody, just give them like $5 worth of Bitcoin and kind of put them up on game. And I think just with that number go up technology, they'll see that $5 turn into $7, turn into $8, turn into $10, and they'll get it, right? Because they've been trained so hard on the fiat side that you can kind of bypass that circular thought process where it's like, oh, I can do this to get more fiat. I can do this to get more fiat. So once they see that you can just buy Bitcoin and instead of getting 100%, you'll get 200%, a lot of the homies would catch on real quick. Another thing too is like when I tell them, yo, if the Fed's kicking your door tomorrow, they can't take your Bitcoin, but they could take your fiat.
Most definitely.
Let's kick off some last words. I want to close it out with Justin so you can talk about your book before we close it out. But let's start for my far right. Let's go with Chris and then Kay, Nature, and then Justin, you can close it out.
Hey, I mean, a lot of people said a lot of great things here. And I think we need to put the subcultures and just all these little ideals that we have. And just, you know how they say the buck stops here, leave all that bullshit at the door when it comes to Bitcoin. Leave all that other shit. It doesn't matter about your race, religion, sexual orientation, your preference, none of that. Your skin color, out the door. We're all orange. We're all Bitcoiners. We're all pro-humanity. We're all pro-freedom, pro-sovereignty. And once again, shout out to you, Justin, on making a book, sparking some ideas over here. Congratulations. And shout out to everybody in the community. I know we can be a little bit rude sometimes and a little bit like standoffish, but I agree with the whole communication topic. So. Once again, we give away Bitcoin all the time. I agree 100% with Tony, with Bitcoin Zay, Justin. We give Bitcoin away all the time on Clubhouse. So I think that's the best way if you really do care about somebody. Everybody take care. Have a great Thursday and see you soon.
All right. Ms. K.
Thank you all for hosting this space. Nod to my brother, Justin. Again, you asked if there was one thing that all the Bitcoiners could do, I could say, start from teaching people how to HODL. Start teaching from the HODLing aspect and then work backwards from there. Thank you all for making this space an equal space, equal for all people. That's what Bitcoin is all about. Understand that this will be the first freedom that some populations ever had a shot at. So without a doubt, let's not waste this opportunity. Let's get into the streets. Let's get into our circles and make sure no one's left behind. Support BTC Impact. We're doing great things across the country. And prayerfully, we'll be coming to a city near you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'm definitely going to look a lot more into BTC Impact, and I am excited to support. So excited to meet you on this space and very grateful for all the conversations. Nature, go for it, my man.
Thank you. I didn't know we could plug, so I'll plug real quick for BBB. We have a newsletter coming out. It will actually come out tomorrow on our website, blackbitcoinbillionaire.com. So we'll have a different collection of all of our moderators, and they'll speak on the topics and expertise that they have. And then also September 24th and 25th is the Black Blockchain Summit. We have Lamar Wilson, Isaiah Jackson. We got like the whole crew. It's going to be great. So if you're in DC, definitely swing through. And I think they're doing a streaming as well. Just to wrap up, I think I said basically what the point I wanted to get across. But you guys, economic, financial literacy, you guys are on top of it. I thank all the educators here, and you're part of the solution. So I just want to say thank you and keep going.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you so much, Justin.
Okay. I thought Kit was going. Kit, you're not going?
Yeah. Thanks for coming on, Justin. We loved hearing about your book and loved everything that you said today. This was a great conversation. Learned a lot. And I can't wait to get a copy of your book. Everyone on a call, make sure you go and check it out. Go get it off of his website or on Amazon.
Thanks. Thank you. So again, shout out to Bitcoin Magazine for even opening up the opportunity. If you want, please, again, grab the book, go to the link in the bio and just choose what works best for you, whether that's Amazon or my website or Bitcoin. And, you know, I want to say this. In my opinion, I've moved past orange peeling. This is all about like a syringe now. You know, injecting any community I feel needs it with Bitcoin. So if someone's out there that's a graphic designer, I would love to see an orange syringe with the B and like some orange drip coming out, because that's how I look at it now. The peeling is still that, but, you know, we need something else that's going to really start uprooting people. So again, I think like Nature said, I'll be in DC as well. If you want, you know, your a book autograph, doing book signings, doing speaking at that conference as well. So if you're in the DC area, pull up. And if you're also in Charlotte, North Carolina, send me a message in the back chat. I'll be open to meet and, you know, just network as much as possible. And that's probably that'll be it. Again, thank you for everyone for coming here. And just go buy the book, From Bars to Bitcoin, man. You can buy it off Amazon. You can buy it off my website. I'll gratefully appreciate it. My two children will. We all greatly appreciate you. So, and I thank everybody for being on this stage. And where the hell did CK go?
He's still there. He's still there. He's just a listener now.
Okay.
He's like, peace.
Okay. So that's my final word.
Thanks, brother.
Thanks again for coming on, Justin, and wish you lots of success in your book.
My phone died. My phone does not handle Twitter spaces very well. But Justin, thank you for closing out. I apologize for being absent there for a second. But y'all, this was an awesome space. Again, we're working out kinks, but this is recorded, so it's not lost into the ether, and we'll be posting it on our Bitcoin Spaces podcast feed. So if you want to get this recording, you want to hear the entire thing, this is an amazing conversation. Go look up Bitcoin Spaces, go subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine YouTube, and you will be able to find this. So working on getting some better distribution on it. But again, Justin, thank you so much. Everyone who came on stage, thank you so much. This was a powerful conversation, and we want to host conversations like this on Bitcoin Magazine. You guys, if you want to meet some of the people on stage, if you want to meet some of the people in the audience, if you want to meet all your favorite Bitcoiners, Bitcoin 2022, can't recommend it enough. I believe promo code SATS is the promo code, Kit. Correct me if I'm wrong.
SATS15.
SATS15. So promo code SATS15 gets 15% off. Tickets are going up in price, so don't wait. And it's going to be August 6th through 9th, 4 days of Bitcoin amazingness in Miami, Florida. So yeah, get hyped. Justin will be there.
Is it August or April, CK?
Oh my God, did I say August? April 6th through 9th. April 6th through 9th. Guys, it's been a long day for me. I apologize. My brain is all fried. But April 6th through 9th, 2020 in Miami, Florida. It's not going to be as hot as August in April. April is going to be some great temperature in Miami. It's going to be a great time. All right, let's close this one out. Thanks again, everyone. Follow Justin at Bitcoin_vegan. Follow Bitcoin Magazine. More conversations like this to come.